Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight in the Southwest. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm really excited about our guest, and we are going to talk trash. In a few moments, I'm going to welcome Terry Gellenbeck, who is, are you ready for this, a solid waste administrative analyst for the City of Phoenix Public Works Department. And as you know, I certainly could not make that up. He's going to talk to us about trash. And he, I just spoke with him a few minutes ago. He's finding a landline on which to call me. So during that time, I will tell you that I'd love for you to listen every Saturday at noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com and invite you to join us there each week. I'm on Saturday noon Arizona time. And as you know, we're the only one that I think in the whole entire country that doesn't change times. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid, and all of the podcasts from the show are on my website right there for your listening pleasure, including this one, www.mrsgreensworld.com, and connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. The social media world is wonderful and going a little bit crazy, and we love that. So we will, Terry is just calling in, and we want to make the show all about him. He's got a great reputation for talking trash in Phoenix, and I hope he gets to hear that. So we are going to welcome again Terry Gellenbeck, who is a solid waste administrative analyst for the City of Phoenix Public Works Department. Terry, are we live with you now?
Yes, Gina, yes we are.
Okay, awesome. I gave you a wonderful welcome, which you'll be able to hear on the podcast when it's up on the website. And great. I said we are going to talk trash. And I think that's true because when you say trash in Phoenix, I think everybody thinks of Terry Gellenbeck. And I'm not sure about that reputation, but you earned it.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. should I say thank you on that or not?
I think you
but
should
we're
say thank
be,
you.
We're going to be talking trash or trash talking.
Trash. I like that a lot. And I mean, there are so many questions. Thank you for the ones that you gave me. And I have, of course, what Mrs. Green always wanted to know. So why don't we start with how did you become a recycling guru? Because you are, and there's no denying that.
I don't think it was by design or maybe someone's design. It wasn't my own, but I started with the city a long time ago. We won't say how long ago.
Okay, no.
And I ended up with the Public Works Department, and this was in 1990.
Okay, so you were 12. Let's just say you were 12.
I was just 12 at the time.
Okay.
And when I was interviewing, and this new concept of something called recycling was coming on, and so I interviewed for the job, and I didn't get it the first time. I was the best man, never the groom kind of a thing.
Is there somebody I can call about that? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
And through various reasons, the person couldn't fulfill the duties that was there, and they needed somebody really quick, and the person that was in charge at the time called me, and I needed a job. I'd gotten out of college. So I started with them. And so that's really kind of how it started. But my background is in science. I'm a geologist. Environmental geology was one of my emphasis. And I had worked in the city council office.
Wow.
In politics. And I got a degree in business and marketing, a master's degree in marketing. So it kind of fit. Really.
It does fit.
That's really kind of how I got into the program. And through the years, through just experience, I'll say attrition, because everybody else left, I've become the historian. So, and I know a lot more than people probably think I should know about, but I know a lot about recycling.
And you know what, Terry? It seems to me, like what struck me when you were answering the question is that it's hard to believe that there ever was a time when we didn't recycle, but we're talking bit over 20 years, and it just seems to me it's so much a part of our being now, at least for those of us that do it, which we want to talk about. So let's talk about, since you were at the very beginning, the booming metropolis of Phoenix. It is vast, just in terms of square miles. It's very densely populated. How did they officially start in the recycling business, and why did they?
Why did they do it?
Why did they? It is
over 520 square miles. I think we're either the second largest in surface area in terms of cities within the United States. I will not agree with you that it's densely populated. That's one of our challenges, is everything's kind of spread out.
And well, so compared to Tucson.
Well, and there's a lot of driving that needs to be done to get to places.
True.
And because
very
of
true.
That
very true.
Makes it expensive. So when it comes to garbage collection and solid waste collection, it costs money to operate trucks and then take all that material to a landfill. And I say all that is that was one of the cornerstone reasons that the city got into recycling. Way before 1990, before they started the program, the city knew that our landfills, the landfills that we have within the city of Phoenix boundaries, were going to close.
Right.
They have a certain lifetime. And when they closed, we would have to take our garbage somewhere. And they knew that the next landfill was going to have to be outside the city of Phoenix limits for the first time in its history. And as it ended up, that's exactly what happened. Our landfill that the city uses is in Buckeye. Now, there are some others that we work with, but they're not within the city of Phoenix either. So we look at it at that time more as a financial reason, an economic reason. But as you well know, sustainability has other legs to the stool.
There's right,
the three
right,
legs.
Perfect.
Economic, right. Environmental, and social. And so the environmental was there, and of course that helped, but the economic was the big piece. And the social, it comes along with it, you know, in terms of the job creation and those types of things. So really that's why the city got into it. Now, what was unique with the city of Phoenix, even before Tucson, was we went with a commingled program.
You're
meaning
kidding.
That all the recyclables went into one container.
Wow.
And then we sorted it later. That we were the first. So there was no precedence, no other city to call, no nothing. We were pioneers in that. Us and the city of Tempe kind of started at the same time. There was a variation of the program in San Jose and in Seattle, but that was it. And we went into it like that, in that way. And we did that because in Arizona and in Tucson, in the metro, in Pima and in Maricopa counties, it's required that garbage be collected twice a week.
Okay.
And by state law, and the counties enforce that. And we got a variance to go one day of the week for recycling and one day for garbage because our studies had shown that 50%, at least by volume, was recyclable. And that's the important piece.
50% was recyclable, but... Okay, go ahead.
We used the same trucks, and so we didn't have to buy a new fleet of trucks and drivers, so that saved us a lot of money. Our money had to go into what's called a MRF, which is a material recycling facility.
Right. We just got a brand new, beautiful one down here in Tucson, as you probably
did, and
know.
I visited it just
it's
recently.
Just
you're right.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful. We just within the last month added some to our MRFs that bring it up to the same technology as the one that you have. But the Tucson one is more vertical. It's higher.
Yes.
It has a... than ours. Ours is kind of spread out, but theirs goes up. It's very interesting. But so our money goes into the MRFs and the contract for those MRFs. So
you know,
it was a pioneer, and I was proud to be part of it. And that, again, is you learn a lot when you have to do that because you have to learn it on your own. There's no internet, nobody to ask.
Right.
That kind of thing. And the city of Phoenix has been known for that for a long time, and the Public Works Department.
No implementation plan. So, you know, I don't think that a lot of people think about features of a recycling program, and there are features. And I think one of the obvious ones you mentioned is the component, which is mind-boggling if you think about it, the logistics and the coordination of that and the fuel efficiency mapping out of it. What are some of the other features when you designed the program or helped the implementation of it? What else do we need to think about in terms of a massive recycling effort?
Each of us and every action that we do adds to the whole. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but it is true. Every small action that you do is you keep what goes into that blue barrel clean, and you put as much as you can that's recyclable in it, will make the program more efficient and more effective in the end. And that's the challenge, is to keep everybody educated on how to do it. When we started, I'll go back to that again, is that nobody knew about it. It was all brand new, so we had to teach everybody from scratch. Even today, people move in from other places that have different styles of programs.
Right.
You may know somebody that lives in another state that had 5 or 6 different buckets, and you sat it out by the curb and all these kinds of things. We didn't have that. Like I said, the commingled was very new. So that's a challenge, is to keep people educated. So we work with our public information office and using all the new technologies to keep people updated on how to properly participate in the program.
And you know what? It's complicated. I mean, I'm Mrs. Green, and I will tell you that I'm constantly asking my husband, so do they take this number? Do they take that number? With the new MRF that we have, it's like, yes, they take it. Okay, it made it easier. But when I'm trying to be, you know, living consciously and be an example, I think it's confusing. So tell us about, let's start with as simple as what the numbers mean on the bottom of the bottles, the plastic bottles or the containers. Everybody doesn't know that.
I'll start with that. I'll tell you what all the numbers mean, but then I'll tell you that you don't need to know that anymore. How's
okay.
That?
Well, then if it's on a need to know basis, and we don't need to know, I don't. It's like it really helped in terms of what I could feel guilty about throwing in, and can I get this in? And okay, so you.
All right. So you look at the bottom of a plastic container,
right?
And you'll see the recycling symbol, which is the chasing arrows,
right?
And within that chasing arrow, there's the numbers 1 through 7.
Right.
And that is put together by the plastic industry. It doesn't mean that there's a number one plastic is the best and 3 is the worst or whatever. It has nothing to do. There's no ranking.
Right.
So number 1 is polyethylene terephthalate.
Okay.
Or PET.
Right.
And that's your water bottles, your 2-liter soda bottles. But now it's clamshells for strawberries. It's liquor bottles, hard liquor bottles. I mean, it's in everything. And in the 20 years I've been in this, it's grown exponentially. So PET is probably the most common that you find at home.
Okay.
Number 2 is high-density polyethylene, which is like your detergent bottles and your gallon milk jugs.
Okay, so much
thicker. Gallon milk jugs are the natural color, and the others are the colored colors. So that's 2 categories right there.
Okay.
Number 3 is the vinyls, or you know, polyvinyl chloride or PVC. The vinyls, sugary things come in those, like candy and oils, because they don't react.
Okay.
Number 4 is low-density polyethylenes, which are like the lids, the plastic lids where you can turn them, but they go back into shape.
Okay.
Number 5 is the polypropylenes, which is like straws and utensils, plastic utensils, things like for more acidic things like ketchup is often in 5. 6 is our friends, polystyrene. You can either have the ones that have the gases injected into them, and you know it as styrofoam or foam. And then the other is like a solo cup, which doesn't have the gases in it. And then number 7 is a catch-all category called other, which is toys and plastic furniture and Tupperware and all those other kinds of things. The reason why you don't really need to know all that anymore is that in the city of Phoenix, and I think in the city of Tucson, it's the same way, that we take all hard plastics. And we started that a few years ago to get away from the numbers. It was too confusing, just like you said, for people. So we take any kind of hard plastic, which means what we don't want are things like plastic bags.
Right.
The foam. We don't want foam because it's kind of gushy, and silly putty is a plastic. We don't, you know, things like that. We don't want the soft plastics.
And one of the reasons is, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know that you know the answer to this. One of the reasons is a plastic bag, I've read things about it, they really, I'm going to use a very articulate word here, they gunk up the recycling machines. They get caught in them. they cause them to stop and jam. Is that one of the main reasons?
That, for us, is absolutely the reason. The MRF or the factory uses a lot of conveyor belts. And the plastic bags can wound up in the conveyors and in where the ball bearings and everything. And you get enough in there, they got to shut the facility down and actually take like a giant machete and cut all that out. And so that downtime,
right,
is the fact that in addition to the fact that the plastic bags get in all the paper, when it gets into other items, it reduces its value when we sell it on the market. So if you have a bale of newspapers and there's all these plastic bags hanging out of it, they're going to pay you less.
Wow.
So that's one reason. The other reason is the danger to the factory and the damage it can do and the time, the downtime. We calculated it that it costs us in Phoenix about $1 million a year for all of that together, the downtime, the value, and all those things. And that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. A lot of money.
We operate up here, 3 MRFs, so that you can divide that out about evenly between the 3 where our materials go, and that's where that number comes from.
And people probably think they're doing something good, like I'm recycling this plastic bag,
right.
So it's a matter of just educating them. Terry, have you seen, this is kind of off the script a little bit, which I'm famous for, but I know you'll have the answer. Have you seen just in the past 5 years, which is, when I started really getting into this whole Mrs. Green's World journey, has the market shifted in terms of what you as the city of Phoenix have been able to sell? Because they were stockpiling things in Tucson, and talking to the people locally and reading nationally, there's almost a market for everything these days if they can find another use for it.
That's true. Almost. It has changed. I will say, if you go back 5 years, start with 2008, was when everything kind of crashed and the world economy crashed. The issue in the United States is that there's not a lot of domestic need for these materials.
Right.
The unfortunate thing is that we buy a lot of our products that come from overseas. So we, Tucson and Phoenix, are actually situated in a very geographically beneficial location in that we're on major transportation lines, both
right,
to the West Coast as well as to the Gulf,
yeah,
and the East Coast, and as well as to Mexico. So, and the domestic markets. So we're in this perfect location where we can sell most of our materials. It all is predicated on the contract that you have. And Tucson had some issues with that. And now they have a much better contract. They happen to use the same contractor that we use up here. It just happens to be that way now. And their philosophy, our contractor, is a long-term relationship. So they might not get the absolute best price on the market, but on the other hand, they have a way to sell everything, including glass.
I was going to ask you about that.
Including everything during a downtime.
Okay.
So that's the benefit. It's all based on commodities and contracts. But a lot of our materials, I will say, do go overseas because they do provide the best prices.
Yeah, and there's the demand.
And they do provide the most continuous markets for the materials that we have.
I know.
Would it be better and more sustainable if they stayed here? Absolutely. But, you know, there's only so much I can do with the trash right now. I can't wait, you know, 5 years for us to create an industry to reuse television glass, for example, or something like that. It's a big issue when it comes to the materials.
And one
we're
of the
all
things that,
excellent at but, collecting
and, one
and
of the,
sorting.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I just, one of the things that was sitting, and people say this to me, not as much anymore, I have to say that, but, oh, I don't recycle, it just sits out there, and they don't really do anything with it anyway, which, of course, I can say, absolutely not, you want to go out there with me? But glass
right.
was sitting for quite a while, so it's happy.
Right.
I'm glad to see that the market for that is picking up.
And now, the good thing, of all those items, it's funny, the glass is starting its own domestic market.
And what do they use it for?
Well, various things. The amber goes back into beer bottles.
Awesome. Okay.
And there's a good domestic market for the brown glass. The clear and the flint glass can be used for a number of things. More glass, of course, though in the United States, we don't package a lot of our food. You know, that's done in Mexico.
Right.
So you send a lot of that kind of glass there. You can use it if you break it down real small. The paint that they use, for example, for striping on
right.
highways, how it reflects at night. The reason it reflects at night is that it has glass in it, and it's reflecting the light back to you.
Did so not know that.
There was a company in Kingman that used to make that.
Okay.
They make like little balls of glass out of recycled glass. They use it for fiberglass and some other items and things like that. So the problem really came with the other colors and the green. If you think about green glass, where does green glass come from? What comes in it? Wines and Heineken beer.
Right. That's where the first thing I thought of.
Where does Heineken beer come from?
Not the United
Europe.
States.
Right, and Holland.
Right.
And where do a lot of wines come from? France, you know, and other places. So to ship that glass and to send it back to where it came from is really expensive. So it doesn't make any sense. And to make glass, really, it's sand and some other things to give it a color.
Right.
There's a lot of energy involved. Yes, absolutely. But there's also energy to melt the recycled glass, too. But that's the problem with the green glass, is finding those markets. And that's why when we put our contract out here in the city of Phoenix, that's one of the things we wanted. It was a long-term relationship for those kinds of items. So when things got bad, we were still able to move the materials. And we would be the first materials to go rather than to wait in line and then sell the rest, which is what apparently happened in Tucson, from what you're telling me.
Well, that's really good news, too. I mean, if you ask me, it's really like, let's move it out, and the more we can keep the United States is great. So let's talk about, time will fly, but let's talk about, does Terry Gellenbeck have any stories about some fun green projects that you've gotten to work on that you want to share with us? Because I love the fun part.
You are going off the list, aren't you?
I am a little bit.
It's fortunate I get to do some really fun things and interesting things when it comes to being in a municipal setting. I get to work with a lot of the grocers with the Bag Central Station program, and it's a public-private partnership, a real one, between us that we provided an alternative to the challenge of plastic bags. Some people want to ban them and all those kinds of things. But all those bins that have appeared in grocery stores, they weren't there until the Bag Central Station program existed.
Okay, good to know.
It was only through, it's able to work with those people as well. That's fun for me. And it's fun for me when I hear we faced a problem, we came up with a solution. Okay, that's one. Another is I get to work with schools all the time. I get to work with people all the time, adults, just to see them and answer the questions, just like I'm doing right now. I get a lot of opportunity to talk to the media and to teach people, and a lot of municipal employees don't get to do that. And so I'm really happy they allow me to do that here at the Public Works Department. I also get to do unusual things in Phoenix and in Tucson as well. Our running races are in the wintertime, which is very different from the rest of the United States.
True.
But one of those things, that problems that they had there, was people clothing and what to do with clothing. A lot of marathoners bring clothing, wear them, keep warm until the race starts, and then just throw them on the ground. That's what they used to do. And then all of that would go into the garbage. So I worked with Keep Phoenix Beautiful, our Keep America Beautiful affiliate. The state of Arizona gave us a grant, and the city of Phoenix Public Works. We worked together here for something called the P.F. Chang Marathon Race, and we recycled clothing. And that's very unusual.
It is. You know? I had no idea. In my research.
And this year we did 2.5 tons of clothing just for the marathon part. And in previous years, when the half marathon was in Phoenix, we did almost eight tons of clothing. And we gave that to our homeless shelter.
Marathon? In one marathon?
One marathon.
8 tons?
Half marathon. Yeah, there's 30,000 people.
It was
incredible. So,
wow.
That's kind of some of the fun stuff, the fun challenges that are out there and to work on and to do. So those are three.
Those are
that
fun.
And also keeping up right now, keeping up with all the new technology. You know, we started out at you suggesting that I was mature. I won't use that other word. I'll use mature. So using the internet, I've way back in the 90s, early 90s, I forced the department to put on an internet page. We were the first to do it. And then now we're tweeting and Facebooking and, what is it, Pinterest.
I know. IPin, yes.
Instagram and all these other things that we're trying to do, the social media aspect. And just trying to keep up with that for the education and the information part. And doing a blog like I'm doing right now.
So you know, I'm kind of, you know, depressed that you didn't say one of the fun things you get to do is be on Mrs. Green's World, but that's a story for another day.
I was leading to that. I'm kidding you. Things like that. But it's to meet people like you, too. You and I met at the Dole Green Conference, did we not?
We did, and it was a very, very, it was like a gateway, I call it, a gateway for me, and I'm going to be coming up to Phoenix next week and following up on some of those partnerships to help share the Mrs. Green juju about all the good things you're doing. So let's go to a little bit back to Terry Gellenbeck Heavy. You know, I'm happy about what you said about Bag Central Station, because it's important. And what I do is I think turn people off a little bit at times when they say, well, you know, I recycle my bags. And I say the best thing to do is reduce. So believe it or not, we have less than 2 minutes left. It blows me away. Give your little shout out on that. I'm sure this will not be the last time you're on Mrs. Green's World. And then how people can connect with you before we're off the air and I forget that I'm saying, oh gosh, I should ask Terry, how do people find what you're doing and what's the website?
Okay, it's phoenix.gov/public works.
Okay.
And there's actually a little thing on there that's going to be called Ask Terry.
I love it. That's great. Okay.
But it's so you can ask questions, but it's phoenix.gov/public works.
Okay, great.
And even if you forget the public works part, just put recycle into the search engine of phoenix.gov and you'll know.
Google's pretty smart, I'll tell you that. I can't believe the things I find. So do you just believe in the 1 minute we have left that the first and most important thing for people to remember is reduce? There's a reason why it's the first R.
Reduce, reuse, and recycle. I don't know. You reduce what you can is far more than most important. Reuse what you can after that, and then finally recycle. Just don't throw it into the landfill. That's a waste of resources.
That's really, really important. Really important.
And it's important. I don't care if you believe or don't believe in climate change or whatever.
It doesn't
just
matter.
Look at it that way.
Right.
It's
the landfills are...
Our resources away.
The landfills are filling up. So Terry Gellenbeck, Solid Waste Administrative Analyst for the City of Phoenix Public Works Department, an example of our tax dollars at the best possible use. Thanks for being our guest, and I will stay connected. I have at least 10 more questions for the next show.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Make it a great green day.